Blog Talk Hello. Radio.
Everyone, this is Marty Oakley of the PVJ Gazette Online, and this is TS Radio, and I have a cold, so there you go. Joining me tonight, of course, is Luann Fleming and Robin Austin. Say hello, guys.
Hello.
Hello,
how's everybody
everyone
doing?
And is Mighty Mouse going to check in this evening?
Oh, wait a minute. Let me see if he's here. Come here, boy. Here I am to save the day.
Yeah. thank you so much. And the show is over. with us also tonight is, to start off with, is Brian Kinter with Judicial Accountability Movement. Brian, say hello to everybody.
Hello, everybody.
Hey. Before we get rolling here this evening, and we've got two more guests that will be joining us during the hour, next hour and a half, I got a couple announcements to make. Charmin Worley, as we all know, whose record Luann has played on her show, I play it on my show, My Last Regret. She is in Nashville. It looks like the record is going to be picked up, and it's going to be a success. And if you get on Reverb Nation, Charmin / and you can download it now for free. She's there, and it looks like this is going to be a go. And who's ever thumping and banging on something in the background, stop it, because I could just choke you. Anyway, I had another little something I wanted to say. I recently made a trip to the East Coast there, and on the flight from Washington, D.C. to Columbia, South Carolina, I picked up a book. I had a layover. And the book, before anybody gets their undies in an uproar, the title will upset you until you hear the whole title. And it's called White Trash, the 400-year untold history of class in America. This book relates so much to what is happening today from a historical perspective. And it's about the actual founding of this country. All of this gobbledygook about we were founded on the Christian religion and it was the pilgrims and, you know, Plymouth Rock and all that. That's all BS. Every bit of it's BS. We were considered what was called an American waste firm, human waste. We were founded by noblemen out of England that when this land was first discovered, were given large parcels of land, and the poor, the homeless, the orphans, those who could not work otherwise, were loaded up on ships and brought over here and literally worked to damn death. They were indentured servants if they died during their service. And what would happen is the noblemen would purchase these people from the crown. If your indentureship did not last long enough, if you died before the indentureship was over, your children had to pick up that debt and continue to pay it off. Women were brought here as breeders. They were brought here to make sure that a new product of human waste was produced every year for exactly this purpose. It was later on, in the late 1700s, that we began importing slaves from Africa. But we have employed slavery in many forms since the beginning of this country, and there is a whole hidden history here. If you read this book, honest to God, it will set you on fire. It is fully documented resource back to the original documents about what actually went on, all this stuff about how they came here, you know, because they wanted separation of church and state and blah, 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 blah. That's all BS. It's all BS. We were to be a produce society. We were the producers of wealth for people who owned land. And what they would do is if these people were able to get any land at all, get even as a tenant, they would find a way to indenture them and take the land from them. Land and any kind of wealth, of course, signifies social standing. So they, in every effort, made every effort to take the land or make sure it was never in the hands of people they did not consider of noble bloodlines. And if you think I'm wrong about any of that, like I say, the documents in this book, there's over 200 pages of documentation easily found if you knew where to look. But we are seeing the same thing today, a whole system put in place that disempowered these what was considered human waste, and which is exactly how our government and these courts perceive us. We are human waste, and we should not and do not have the right to anything. And anything we do have, they should be able to take from us, because, after all, we're not as good as they are. And this class system has been running since day one. Like I say, you may think there's no correlation between what I'm telling you and what's occurring now, but when you read this book, and it's written in such a way that you won't be able to put it down, because it will scare the bejesus out of you to see the similarity between how we were actually founded, on what we were actually founded, and what they are doing to us now in this point in time based on this same system. So I would like to recommend that book to you. And it's called, again, as I said, White Trash, The 400-Year Untold History of Class in America. They're robbing us blind, tearing our families apart, selling and buying and trading us because we are human waste. And anyway, that's what they think. People have always said I'm the shits. Well, anyway, there you go. But our show tonight is like I say, what are your rights? What are your rights when you go into these courts? And it turns out you ain't got any. These tribunals are set up specifically to avoid your rights, any constitutional protections. And that's another thing in this book. When you read what the original drafts of the Constitution were, it'll make you want to throw up. What they actually had in mind for us, which they knew would cause a rebellion if people were to find out about it. So it was rewritten so that we have this other document, which was again rewritten in 1871 and became the Organic Constitution, and it incorporated the federal government. And so you don't, going back again and not to get too political here, but we don't elect presidents. You may think we do, but we do not. We elect the chief executive officer of the corporation that operates as the federal government. And when the president speaks to you, and the first time you heard this clearly was during Bush Cheney, when he's speaking as the president and he's speaking constitutionally, he refers to himself as the president. When he is outside of the Constitution and speaking as the chief executive of the corporation, he refers to himself as the chief executive. We have not elected a president since 1871. Our Senate, every member of the Senate is seated as an incorporated individual. They act as the board of directors, and the House is the shareholders. That's the people. The whole thing is set up. I mean, when you see how this is done, it was all a corporation to begin with. So we're dealing with a massive corporation that views us as human waste. So anyway, that being said, Brian, we're gonna start out with you. And you were in the Judicial Accountability Movement, JAM. You're going to be on the panel this year with me at the summit. And we're going to be talking about the system. And talking about the system and how it works against the people, what is the main core thing you would cite that enables them to target us, target our families, our children, our parents, whomever? What is the main vehicle they use to do that?
Allegations. You know, once an allegation is made, it takes on a life of its own. And then you spend the rest of your life trying to prove out a false negative. It's like me saying, well, you know, Marty Oakley punched me in the eye. I have 10 people come in and say, yeah, Marty Oakley punched me in the eye. And yet nobody looks at the fact that Marty Oakley is living in Minnesota and I'm living in the state of Ohio. That's all. It's irrelevant. What we have is that we've got 11 people that said Marty did this, so therefore Marty had to have done it. That's what we have within our court system. Once that allegation is made, regardless of the facts and the common sense approach, because here we have, let's look at the facts. Marty never applied an airplane ticket. She didn't have a vehicle to transport herself out of there. She didn't have the wherewithal to be able to drive down here. There was no evidence of her being here whatsoever. It's just 11 people coming together. Well, that's what you got with the court. You've got your attorney, you've got their attorney, and I know that's a real shocker for some people when they say your attorney, but when you go into the court, predominantly these attorneys already know what's at stake, how many dollars you have, and it's spoil for the plunder. They're just coming in and going to take anything and everything that they can to better the bar. You know, and it's interesting, Marty, because one of the things is that I'm looking at right now, and I apologize I don't have the lady's name, but on Saturday I had received a phone call from a Superior Court Justice out of the state of Alaska by the name of Anna Freckland, something like that. And I have my children, so I told her that she would have to get a hold of me later on in the week. And I'm not sure if I offended her or whatever, but I'm tired of these judges coming back and stuff. But she was saying, I filed a suit against the Bar Association. Well, that immediately piqued my curiosity. You know, so I'm hoping that I can establish the dialogue with this lady to see what we're moving forward with. But to me, the whole premise of the judicial process is that you're fed a shit sandwich. You know, as a society, we have been raised and brought up, and I think that you, I think Lulu, I think Robin, myself, anybody and everybody else, before we ever became engaged with the court, we believed that when you went to the court, you know, as long as you told the truth, the whole truth, nothing but the truth, you're going to come out okay. You might not like everything, but at least you felt like you were given justice. Well, we've discovered that it's just an illusion. It's just so that the state can run you through this circus event so that they can extract every damn thing that you have. So my whole issue is, I think I can sum it up in one word, and that's accountability.
Well, and that's, you know, what we've talked about several times on this show. I got weighed late a little bit here, Brian, with traveling, and then I've got this bronchitis. But anyway, setting up these citizen oversight committees within each state. And I've got a lot of interest here in the state of Minnesota about doing this. I also was contacted by an attorney that I know who said, if you try to do this, they're going to come down hard on you. And I said, under what authority? You know, my statement to everyone has been, this would carry no force of law. It is simply to database the fact that these complaints have been made about the mistreatment, the violation of rights, the failure to follow rules of evidence, the civil code of procedures, to follow any sort of dictum that would be available in an actual constitutional court. And what was the outcome of this? Oh, they didn't do anything wrong. Wait a minute, you just robbed somebody of $250,000 and walked away. Yeah. What do you mean you didn't do anything wrong? And this is to highlight this, that this self-policing does not work. I still maintain that citizen oversight committees are a first step in getting this information out to the public. This is what's actually happening in these courts, or what they're calling courts. Luann, Robin, what are your thoughts here?
Well, I think that Brian kind of hit on the major thing. We see allegations that are then treated as though they're gold-clad fact, and then based on allegations like that, people are dragged into court and everything is robbed from them. And we've seen it over and over and over. I think if that's, you know, if you ask what the number one thing is, that's really it. It's the fact that it is so easy to manufacture whatever facts you want to support a point that says this person, for whatever reason, should be divested of what they own, and it should be put into my hands or the hands of the court, which is all my friends and buddies that are going to make sure that we all get paid. And, you know, for whatever they manufacture, it can be anything because it's a lie. They're making it up.
Yes.
It's fictitious. So they look at a person and they just figure, okay, what's going to stick? I mean, I know one guy, I know one person that was telling me about this person had a neighbor that was just a 92-year-old man who was quite able. He's mowing his own lawn and he's, you know, he's driving his own car, he's buying his own groceries, he's cooking his own food, he's doing everything for himself and getting along just fine. And then this neighbor sees social services one day outside of his home, looking at it and talking about him, and he walks over and starts to speak to them, and they all run away. And so he watches, and over the next 6 weeks or so, they move in on the neighbor, they move him out of his house, they take his Mercedes and drive it away, and they take his property, and he's now in custody of the court. Basically, the court has assigned him a guardian, and now he's unable to function as a regular human being, because once you have a guardian, as you well know, and as Brian well knows, as we well know, once you have a guardian, you have no rights, you have no identity.
Right.
It is a personality theft that allows them to act as you, and then you don't have your own rights anymore. They have been taken right along with your identity, and so we see it all the time. And what those people went to the court to allege was, I suppose, oh, this poor 92-year-old man needs our help. And the court goes, 92? He must. Okay. Without even really having an honest look at anything, they just go on the allegation, accept it, and ruled. And the next thing you know, every drop of money you've got is being squeezed out of you, and everything that you wanted to hand over to your children is being robbed from you, and you yourself no longer have freedom, no longer have a voice, no longer have the right to choose where you want to eat or what you want to eat or when you want to eat or what you want to drink. If you'd like to drink some water, well, that's up to someone else who determines how much water you drink. Or whether you want to take drugs, that's up to someone else to determine what drugs you take and when you take drugs. And if you don't want to take the drugs, whether they will inject you with them anyway, which is what they do. So,
yes.
Yeah, as you said it.
That's
the other thing too. This laundry list that they stand up, and I think, and Brian, I think you can attest to this, that they stand up in these courtrooms, and there again, this gets back to they don't have to follow the rules of evidence. And Robin, as you laid out so plainly, they can stand up and say anything. Like Brian said, they could say Marty punched me in the eye. Marty's never been to Ohio. But 11 people said that they saw her do it. So it's true. They don't have to provide any evidence. They can make any charge, any claim they want to. And they never are asked for nor required to produce any evidence to substantiate that claim of wrongdoing or of the person's incapacitation, anything. And I think this is what happens to people, what we're now calling legal abuse syndrome. We have people who walk into these courtrooms thinking they know the law, that it's going to prevail, justice is going to win the day, and they are overwhelmed with this wall of corruption, that this was a done deal before you ever got in, and then they're forced to stand and listen to these false allegations, and they are not allowed to defend themselves. The judge will not accept any evidence to refute what that guardian and their attorney have said. they won't allow it to be put on their desk, entered into the record, and they have gone so far now as they are removing all audio, and you cannot even hire your own stenographer to make a court's transcript because they do not want a record. Too many people are hitting these public records and showing a clear pattern of racketeering. Again, this is where I get back to the citizens' commissions. If we start collecting this data ourselves, and you cannot just come in and say, oh, this happened, that happened, they didn't do anything. You've got to have documentation. We submitted this complaint. Nothing's been done about it. This is who we submitted it to. This is what it involved. Show proof of service. And nothing happened to this person for intentionally frauding the court, for basically telling a bald-faced lie in order to disenfranchise the person that they have come after. And as I've said repeatedly, this is the ultimate in identity theft. That person sitting there that they're doing this to just ceased to exist in the law. I got in a quite a heated argument with an attorney from out west here in the last couple of days since I've been home, who tried to tell me that this was not the case. And what I said was, what happens? That person suffers a civil death. They said, oh, that's not true. There is that, and there is no basis. Where did you get such a lunatic? I said, from two constitutional attorneys. And I said, you look it up in Black's Law, and it says that when this happens to you, this is considered a civil death, and it's the same in its legal consequences as a natural death. You cannot speak for yourself. You cannot defend. Dead people can't speak. You can't defend yourself. You can't do anything. That person standing on the other side who's about to take everything you ever had, including your name, now presents themselves as you. They sell your property as you. They present themselves in legal contracting as you, not as themselves. They sign your name. They are given a testamentary of power to sell your property. You can't say a word. You're dead in the law. They didn't like hearing this. And then, of course, I was reminded how I'm not an attorney, which I am not. But doesn't mean I'm stupid. I can read. It's hard to read some of this stuff because I swear they're all crazy, every one of them. They're crazy as bats out of hell. You get into reading this stuff, and it's enough to make you lose your mind. But this is the whole thing. And so this has got to get down on the local level. Luann, you and Robin have been quite active there in Colorado on the local level, fighting this stuff. I mean, actually on the road, going to meetings, speaking up, speaking out, petitioning, doing whatever you could do. But this is the only place we can make changes. Because on the federal level, these people could give a crap whether we live, die, or survive. And it's not much better within the states, but it is the only place we have any leverage. Now, Brian, let's go back to you. When you were dealing with your case, and you got this all the way when it became apparent that you were going to go to the Supreme Court, what was the response within the state?
Well, the state's response was, yeah, okay, well, you can do whatever you want to do, but it's not going to change anything. And I went through all these different attorneys, and these attorneys were saying, you know, no, we're not going to represent it. This is the way it's going to go. This is the way it's going to go. And it's like, wait a minute, I'm paying you, and yet you're going to tell me how the hell things are going to play out? That's about freaking ignorant, you know? So I just decided, you know what, we're going to sidestep all this stuff. The federal court, we're going to sue these people, and that's exactly what we did.
Wow. We've had two of our other guests join us. Chris Hallett, you're online with us now. Say hello to everybody. He's not talking. Chris? Fine,
hello,
don't talk to us. I'll just let Mighty Mouse talk. That's all there is to that. Lotus, are you going to talk to us? Yeah, oh, there's Mighty Mouse. Never mind. Yeah. Oh, wow. I don't know what's going on here. Yeah, I've got them both on. I've got Chris and Lotus both loaded, and but they're not responding. So if and when you can hear us, you just jump right in.
Can you hear?
Oh,
can you hear me now?
Yes. I can hear you now. Yes.
I thought we were still talking about Chris.
Yeah.
Sorry, my bad. Hi, everybody.
All right.
Hi. Welcome.
Hi. Welcome.
Yeah. Lotus.
So yeah, I've been listening to.
Yeah. Go ahead. Go ahead.
I was saying, I was listening to your conversation, and I was taking some notes. So, yeah, go ahead.
I've listened to you talk before. The only thing I would ask you is, as one of the most knowledgeable people I have ever heard speak about any of this, to speak a little slower, because people like me were old, and it takes me a little bit of time to make notes, okay?
Absolutely.
But you have really learned this system. And what would you suggest to people? What would you suggest how to fight the system back?
Well, what I would say to everybody is your perceptions are absolutely correct. And in pretty much everything, you're deemed dead. And you have been hypothecated since birth. Okay. So what most people, what most people don't know, and I have come to find, is the significance of the Tona Amendment. It started with me understanding there was a problem in my government, and actually working through the courts, learning the law mirrors and things like this, and started advocating and barristering for people who were disabled and or homeless, who in the city of Columbus, they actually racket them. Like when they need money, they just go round up every homeless person, regardless of what they're doing, and they just run them as bond slaves to the jail.
Where was this at, Lotus?
Columbus, Ohio. It's one of the worst jails in the world, I would say. I think the United Nations is starting to look into it. I've been in it. It's a death trap. It's a gulag. I know people who were there for 2 years with no light, no natural light.
Oh, my God.
Never having seen grass, you know, in the exact same room and or only one visit a week. And there's black mold. It's a horrible facility, and it needs to be shut down. It's a gulag. In hindsight, when we look back, we will understand that that is the modern-day pathway into the labor camps. So it's a horrible place. So I had a friend who had been telling me what was happening in this, and he said, the cops always find me. I'm like, what are you talking about? He's like, all the time, you know. And he had a disability, and he was kind of a street vagabond, but that was his sense of freedom. He had an apartment. He just really hung out on the street all the time with all his friends. And he said, they find me all the time. I said, that can't be possible. And so I believed him, though. And I said, I'll tell you what, I want to understand your concept of all the time versus mine. I said, keep a journal. And he kept it for like a week, and they stopped him like 10 times.
Wow.
And I was like, man, and they would stop him in one part of the city before he went to work on his bike, and then he'd go to work because he didn't have a car. He rode a bicycle. He had a professional bike, so he rode it, you know, miles and miles a day. And he would go 40 miles to work and get picked up by a cop there. It's like they almost had some beacon on them. And I said, they're tracking you with your cell phone or something, dude. They have you tagged as a mark. And so we started paying attention.
Got him chipped.
And we found, like it was in his free Obama phone. Who knows? It was on his phone.
Yeah.
But he also had been tagged in his life. They had used him. His mother had him declared incompetent as a child and got Medicaid and Medicare. And he just kind of was filtered into this, right? He did. He had some ADD. He did have some issues, okay? But some of it was also contrived. Basically, they were milking him for the system. When he was younger, it was on disability, Medicaid, Medicare, and then they tagged him as someone who was easily picked off the street and couldn't defend himself, and then run him through the bond system of the thing. And then they'd clip him for a day. You know, he'd go in on Saturday and get out of, you know, on a Monday. It wasn't like extended periods, but he was tired of it. He was like, and he was being forced into these disability courts. And so we discussed about me helping him, because I had done research on demurrers, and I knew that these people were not our de jure government, because I had researched the 13th Amendment. And I found out that it was lawfully passed, and it can be proven in state papers. And I'd researched this and knew about this. And so that started my foray, because then I became the object of their ire. Because, you know, the first time I was arrested was for being with this young man in court, and she was clearly railroading him, and he was very you know, he was capable of speaking for himself, and she wanted him to go into the court where he couldn't speak for himself, the disability court. Like they say, oh, you're tagged as on Medicaid. You're going to go to this court. You're abrogated. You don't speak, you know, just what you're speaking. And they do it to the disenfranchised and to the poor and to the infirm, mm-hmm. and mentally ill that live on the streets and or just have even have a home. I mean, they're basically eating those groups that the law is a shield to. So I knew they weren't being lawful. I had enough politics to know it was corrupt as can be. And I got arrested because he said, I'm demurring to you because I want to know why you can keep picking me up when I'm doing nothing wrong. And he got arrested for jaywalking in a wheelchair because he went off a non-handicap ramp when he had just had his hip rebuilt for saving a woman's life. Okay, this is how bad they targeted this guy. He had gotten a jaywalking ticket or arrested for every mode of transportation, including in a wheelchair. Okay. So
good God.
It's horrible here. I mean, if people understood what they do, I mean, they just really, especially in these, Ohio is horribly corrupt, a horribly corrupt city. Columbus is a horribly corrupt state. But you know what I'm saying. So I go in there, he says, I demur. Because I told him, well, you know, ask him how the authority does this. And in the law, it's called a demur. And he said, I demur. And she goes, well, I'm just going to send you over there. He goes, no, I demur, which means she has to say and explain how these cops have the authority, the jurisdiction. He's challenging the jurisdiction to keep railroading him. And,
right.
And she says, I'm going to ignore that. I said, ma'am, no, you're not. I said, he demurred. I'm here to make sure that you assist him in his demur because he's asked me to make sure, as his advocate, that you understand what he's saying. And she proceeded to threaten me, of course. And I was like, no.
Uh-huh.
And she says, I will arrest you. I said, I demur. You can't. You know, if I demur to you, you don't even have the power to arrest me. You know, why do you keep harassing this man? It was basically to be a civil conversation. Because he wanted her
right.
to know that he felt that they were racketeering him. She didn't care. She's party to it, right?
Right.
And she arrests me right there, but she arrests me for contempt out of court while I was standing
what?
In court. Because she knew that I was not in her court, so she acted as though she sent an order to me ex parte, like to my house, and I refused to come, all in 1 2-second conversation. Do you understand? She arrested me as though I had not satisfied an issuance of the order of the court sent out of the court. And that's what started my foray into the racketeering of the Bar Union of Ohio and the courts here. And, it got worse and worse, and I evolved the writ of conspiracy. I was arrested in a court of, I call them forums. People would call them courts, but they're bankruptcy courts, but they're war courts, too. They're operating the law of war. And basically not beating you with clubs, sometimes they are. They'll go to that extent, but it's really the law of commercial oppression after you have conquered a people is what it kind of is. And they've had to conquer us through bankruptcies and coup and obfuscating the TONA. Because the significance of the TONA, which is the Titles and Nobility Amendment, which, you know, I read a conspiracy which goes right into Chris's stuff, because the 13th Amendment, the TONA Amendment, is the first and only time that Congress has ever established what the penalty for a specific form of emolument is, which is in the acceptance of a title of nobility, such as a doctor, an esquire, a gentleman, a king, things like that. Those are titles of nobility in the king's hierarchy.
Right.
And we established that, and the significance of, and that if you do take a title of that nobility, you may not be have a position of power or trust in the United States, or any of them, I think it's language. I don't think it's either. It's any of them. So it's the United States or any of them, the United States. So you can't have a position of power trust in any aspect of the United States of America, republic government of the states or the federal, or banks, power or trust. You don't have control of those. And that's an absurdity at the time in its statement, because Bar Union members were integral aspects of every aspect of the government and were the keepers of our trading partners' banks and the system of the king's banking systems, you know, through Rome. I when I say Rome, I mean the heretical, I consider it a,
yes.
the heretical church of Rome, okay?
Right.
So who are not our kings, and they are not our Elohim. So when we said that, it was actually because we were saying, we're done with you. We are not subject to the law of your realm anymore, because the law of the realm were those titled nobility instruments. That's how the kings and the pope imposed their banking and their business structure and the rule and the courts. Everything was run by title of nobility instruments dictated by the king and the pope.
Lotus,
and
when I opened the show, I talked about this book. Like I say, I can't recommend it enough. It's called White Trash, the 400-year
mm-hmm.
untold history of class in America. And you just elucidated exactly what this woman is talking about in this book. How you could not, and they're still practicing this same system today.
Absolutely.
You were not supposed to own land or own anything unless you had
no.
a title of nobility. And
right. Well,
because if you don't have
right.
that title, take everything from you.
Right. Well, if you're that is true in that respect, that you we were some of the first people to have allodial titles. But that has to do with the structure of the government that was passed down. So our history is actually based on, like, this progression from correcting the errors of the first Roman Republic. Because I tell people all the time, we're the Roman Republic with the 24 fasces given to the common law grand juries instead of the dictator, Caesar. We have all of, they basically moved some of the positions around and gave them to different people to hope to create a republic that worked this time and was uncorruptible, which Rome was corrupted by the abuses of statutes. And that's the purpose and the history of the Peloponnesian and the foundations of the Peloponnesian War. So they've done the same thing to us, and we actually corrected ourselves this time and said, we're going to draw a line in the sand here, though, and we're going to say, we are not parties to the law of your realm, which when that happens, the instruments in our estates would then be declared civili mortis. The instrument itself, the United States of America, and its estates, and our estates, they leave the E off every time they say that, but it's the United Estates, okay? So our estates at that time, under feudal law, had to be placed into the care and custody of the same people we said were corrupt. And so
yes.
you're seeing they're circumventing that because they actually have to comply with the Tona, but they obfuscated it. And I highly suggest that people write this down, because this is what people need to understand and read. Because if you understand the history and the law that they're imposing, which is admiralty law on the land,
it's a
gross imposition and infraction of admiralty law on the land. But admiralty law is a law derived from war. So what we're doing in war, I mean, in this progression, it's a progression of law where men don't war anymore, okay, per se, not like they used to, men and women. Societies don't war anymore, and we've come to logic and reason called sedant arma toga, which is a maxim of Roman law, which is let the sword yield to reason. So we're working to a more reasoned world where men war less and have more conversations, and men tend to war over who holds land, who owns things, who has the power to do things. So
mm-hmm.
that is how admiralty has come to be required to establish arguments and statutes that are supposed to prevent war
mm-hmm.
upon things. But they're coming in the form of law, admiralty, that is derived. Maritime admiralty and prize law are all rooted in piracy. Who pirated the boat? If you go read admiralty cases, they're about people who stole somebody else's boat, and the arguments about how you unlawfully seized my vessel and you took what was in the keel and you shouldn't have done that, and it's concurrent jurisdiction because that product is beholden to a common law company. Like, that's what these arguments are about in the founding of our country. We're
mm-hmm.
the vessels now. So we
right.
the vessels are down to us, the vessels of our soul. So
mm-hmm.
that's why we have a fourth crown. We actually established as a country an independent realm of law that is not subject to the other crowns. We're not supposed to be subjected anymore, since we gave our estates back to the Pope to be managed and their trustees. That's why their administrators are supposed to be trustees of our trust, and they're not supposed to diminish it. We're the beneficiaries and creditors, and we were required to do that by feudal law at the time when we remove them from our positions of power, trust, and authority in our handling of our estates and chattels. So they've circumvented that, though, with the 14th Amendment and the plenipotentiary that we had to proffer a surety in the war, the Treaty of Peace and Amity of 1812, which is citizens of the United States. And they just twisted it to be United States citizens in the 14th. And that's where you get your dead instrument. That's the dead instrument of the trust, right there. But we've been misled to not know that there are trustees and administrators, and they're operating as though there's some tyrannical force of occupiers and oppressors with a foreign master. I mean, because that's what they are. We're being occupied by admiralty law upon the land, which is imposing forced bankruptcies that were initiated from the fraudulent bankruptcy after the Civil War. That's what the Bankruptcy Act of 1898 established, was the ability of the courts to impose forced bankruptcies using police powers upon people. If you read it, that's what it's about. And they were doing that collecting for the corporations that came to them and said, while you guys were at war, we lost all this money, and now you owe us. And the state said, we're not paying. Get it from the people. And that's what happened. The state, and then the way it's established actually talks about setting aside bonds when you do that. I mean, everyone should read the Bankruptcy Act of 1898. They should read the Bankruptcy Act of 1841. But every Bankruptcy Act since the Civil War, there's been three new ones. They all are just modifications of the same Bankruptcy Act of 1898. So if you read the first one, you understand the guiding principles of the purpose of it, and that was to take the cost and the loss of the war on our own land, which was fraudulent to begin with, from the people themselves, of which, and the sovereigns. So it was basically carpetbagging after the war by the banks.
Well, and Lotus, the thing is, again, going back to this book, they refer to the common public, the general public, these non-landholders, as human waste. And we are viewed as human waste now. And we see this at work in them culling the elderly, euthanizing them, taking our children, forcibly adopting them out. They're buying and selling them. They are bankrupting the parents. The parental alienation thing is very real. They're tearing the American family apart piece by piece.
They're kidnapping children.
Yes, we are. They're kidnapping the elderly. They are taking everything they can get their hands on, and they are euthanizing those of us they see as having no ability to produce more product for them. And one of the other things that they said in this book too was that the breeding of children was encouraged so that they, and we see this reflected in what is now called the poverty draft. We have such a large portion of the population now living below the poverty level that many of these young people see the only way out as the military. And so they wage wars. Wars are always fought over land. That's all they're fought over. The land, everything comes from the land. And all of our land has been hypothecated since the Iraq War. Condoleezza Rice was sent to China, who was the only one who would loan us money. We owed them so much already. All land loans of that international nature are through the IMF World Bank. The only thing they will accept from anyone as collateral is land. So right before she was sent over to China to beg for money, every square inch of this country was GPS located. China now is here to collect. They have eminent domain in this country.
Well,
she
hypothecated
our land. Not
right.
Not
well, and that's
land.
And that's the necessity to cure the trust and to expose the fraud, because there's only, here's what the more important part. Well, I think everyone should go read a case file that we have, which is what I'm working with my son, because I'm curing the trust in a different way than Chris is. I'm establishing claims in tort for these kidnappings. I mean, we're going to hold the fascists accountable for their murders this time. and the loss of people, because I believe we are in a horrible holocaust like nobody knows.
I do too.
I think there are tens of hundreds of thousands of people that are, I know that there are millions being trafficked. I actually believe that there are more, that there are hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of children being disappeared worldwide by these child trafficking and human trafficking. I don't know where they're putting them. I don't know who's taking them. I know that they're doing horrible things to them, from what I understand, that they're killing them, hunting them, eating. I mean, these are just...
Yes.
There's someone that's feeding, literally, upon our children. As a source of power and control in this world, and that is the more divine and biblical sense to the fourth crowd. You know, this is the law of the common law that's derived from the Bible and Christianity and Orthodox Christianity. You know, the Eastern Orthodox Christianity that America was founded upon. And that's the we're not part of your realm of ecclesiastic. Roman civil and monarchical law, where you have false Elohims and people who sell their favor for personal lucre as sophists and don't subscribe to a greater body of consciousness, you know, to all get along. You know, you want to use people and torn and hurt the infant and the insane and the infirmed, and we believe those people should be protected. It's a complete antithesis of how their Babylonian slave trade law functions, and yet we have to cure it that we can bankrupt it all the way back to the crucifixion of Christ.
Right.
You know, so it's that kind of thing, because the reason why they always win and they always are sustained is because of their attorneys. And attorneys are attorneys. They are attorneys at law. They twist at law. They twist the law. They're technically, philosophically, and by Aristotle's standards and definition, they are sophists. They are people who sell their knowledge of the law, if they have any, to be honest with you, for personal gain and lucre, to the highest bidder. They have no morality. Their job is to do three things. I mean, there are principled attorneys, but the practice of being an attorney has no principles to it. You follow the process, and you milk the bar of bankruptcy, and you always throw it to the guy who pays you the most, which is, of course, the corrupt state. So if you're going to throw the bar and finally rout out the elitism and the corruption within people who think they own the world, I was like, where did you buy it from? Who did you buy it from? You know, the Pope thinks he owns the world and is the vicar of our Savior and our advocate that he murdered, or at least his followers did, you know, Rome did. You know, you murdered our advocate, and you want to say you speak for how we clear his jubilee? No, I don't think so. That's the central argument of this. It's about the progression of law from being slaves to being free men who own their own capita in a dual republic that doesn't allow the corruptions within the instruments of state, because there are checks and balances. That's what our purpose is in divine providence is. So attorneys, they do three things. And they do it all the time. They prevent facts from being put on the record. They prevent law from being put on the record. Positive law, any kind of law. They prevent. I don't even care if you cite their administrative rules and codes and their little practices that they have in their own little personal courts. They don't want it on the record. It's so bad that they don't even let prisoners copy statutes. If you were to send a state statute to anybody who is in prison in Ohio, they would consider it and confiscate it as contraband. So imagine the prisons where there are no libraries or computers or no law books, that basically if you wanted to defend your rights and be your own counsel and be not pro se, but in propria personam, as the Judicial Act of 17.8 requires this in order to invoke the Savings to Suitors Clause, you have to be in propria personam.
What that is, Lotus, please. Explain what that is.
In propria personam, there's different standings in law, and that's how you present yourself in law. Why I have a right to speak as I'm speaking, why I have a right to be enjoined, why I have a right to defend myself, all these things. It's the defense of right. But there are certain standings that you automatically have rights in. In our system of law, when you go into their forums, you should never allow them to say you're pro se, nor should you say you are pro se. That's pro succum. That means with them. You need to say pursuant to the Judicial Act of 1789, which created the statutory courts, which is where they divided the Article 3 and the Article 1 courts, see? in 17, the Judicial Act of 1789, that's when they created the Articles 3 court system. And there's rules. Those are the founding principles that guide those this courts that we're under right now, the guiding principles and foundations of how they were established de jure are in that act. And in that act it says...
Hold. What does de jure mean? Oh,
de jure means squarely within the law, with a proper grant of law from the people, legitimate in the law. De facto is the opposite of that, if you're going to be, because de facto means you are at law, which means you kind of have bent the rules of the law or left the true high law set aside so you can have an argument, let's say, in trust. So we're in de facto, and the law is not suspended. It's just kind of sitting there waiting for the argument to ripen or mature, to be brought to the bar and say, ha-ha, we told you so. So what we told them when the trust was created is that we consider your titles of nobility corrupt inherently because you have more than one master, and you don't follow the rules. You don't do things for the benefit of the people. You have these secret societies. You have these secret handshakes. You have the secret words and language where you hide things. You don't do what you say you're going to do, and you're corrupting
right.
our instruments of state. We're done with you because we'd already warned them two times before. The emoluments is mentioned in two times. So the title of the nobility amendment is the default. You're done. Because you have to put a penalty upon a law or it can't be enforced. If you don't have a penalty for a statute,
right.
it's not supposed to
be. Right,
yes.
Thank you.
So the tona is the is where we said, this is the this is the penalty in law, not in statute, in law, for when you take emoluments, which we told you we're not going to tolerate since the founding of our country, not our nation, our country. And we, because first time, I think, Northwest Ordinance, second time, the de jure Constitution, default, boom, you're done. Here's the penalty for this violation in law, de jure, when you take an emolument of a title of nobility and you're done. You're not in our law anymore because you corrupt it. But we were required by the feudal law at the time to give the same people our estates as our trustees because that's the law that it was established. And so we said, okay, let's go for this argument in law. Let's see how long it takes us till we can prove you are corrupt inherently, that there's a root of evil within your instruments of titles and nobility. Because if you prove, if we're made to put our estates in civili mortis, if we prove and go back and say, we told you we didn't want you in here because you served more than one master, yada, yada. You served Britain and Rome and secret people. We said you were corrupt. Oh, look. Now in 2012, we find out we knew you exist. Now look here, in 2018, we're about to expose your union for exact corruption it is and all the instruments of law. Guess what that means, people? We can demand our estate back because that's
wow.
civili mortis law. So it's
and
just
that's called
hearing
that's
of the
called
argument.
Hold it, Lotus. That's called what law? Civili?
Well, that's the principles of civil mortis, of becoming civili dead in feudal law. So what we did is we made a new kind of law. We made a new kind of crown of law where the people are the ultimate dictators. They hold the 24 faces. You know the little bundles with the little axes in them that are on either side
yes.
of the lectern in the Congress?
Those, yes.
Those faces, by the numbers, mean things, okay? The highest number, because these are honors. These are honors, I think, within the temples, okay, which were the Republic. It's weird if you study Rome, but we're we're derived like this. We are the second evolution of the systems of Republic law that Rome brought forth, but then it became corrupted. So they fixed it. They said, let's try this time, right? So those faces are an honor. And the person who held the most possible, 24, was Caesar, the dictator. And there's an instrument called the Curial Aedes, I believe, Aeses, and that has two, which like her Congress does, and that's the person who is responsible for maintaining the public safety, the public instruments, just like our Congress is. So
okay.
we're an evolution of that. So
okay,
when,
now,
when,
wait,
when
well,
we,
hold up, sweetie, you're going too fast.
Sorry,
Curial.
There's so much history here.
Yes,
yeah.
yes,
so,
Curial. And what's the other word?
Yes. I think it's
Curial.
Aedes. I can look it up. But if you look up faces, which is F-A-S-C-E-S, that's what those little Roman. You see them, they're on either side of the lectern. They're the bundle with an axe in them. Like they're
okay,
a bundle of
right,
leaves
yeah.
with an axe in them. So those are honors. That's like a stripe on a, you know, if I were to give an analogy, you know how you can tell a sergeant from a captain
yes.
by their stripes?
Yes.
Well,
yes.
And when they, these would be instruments. They were like reeds of authority. Like they were, you would keep them
okay.
like a medal, but they were really big and bulky, but they would show that you had a power granted to you by the Republic people. So Caesar had 24. Certain instruments had 12. Other ones had 6. So, and they were the magistrates would have 6, and they would push parade into their courts with these bundles to show how high in the magistrate they were. See, so
okay.
these it's all this old Roman stuff. So we're really just in an evolution of law. So you're being warred upon by the very law that you're going to replace. Okay.
Right.
We're going to not replace it. We're going to ripen it. We're going to fix it. We're going to mature
okay.
the constructs of Republic instrument. And so you're being warned upon. That's a very fact. And
okay.
how we're going to fix that, though, is teaching people the law and people to understand. If you feel like you're being warned upon in these courts, you are. Those are military courts. One
yes.
of the most interesting things that has happened in the last 7 days is out of Boise the Boise Congress, you know, House or whatever, they
mm-hmm.
just passed like 11-2 some act that's supposed to be supported by patriot groups, which if these are patriot groups, I'm not going to bet they're patriot groups. They couldn't be because they could never call themselves a patriot and create a document where they want to – it's just in committee, but it passed 11-2. And the wording is something as such, and I could get it for you exactly, but it says the – citizens, or this citizens, let's say citizens, the Idaho government, or whatever that body is, has determined that we will no longer allow the law of war to be imposed upon, or practiced in this respect, upon the Idaho people and Idaho citizens, none of these are defined as far as I know, by the federal legislature and the United States president.
Holy crap.
Okay. I know. So they left it so just the judicial branch can practice the law of war in Idaho and are trying to bar by state statute the POTUS from executing, let's say, Article 4, Section 4, and in the interest of national security and safety of the people, go into Idaho and arrest people, let's say Idaho citizens and bar union corporations making war upon the Idaho person. I mean, it's just, it's a clear desire to remove, to totally just, this is why it can't be a patriot. If anyone who's a patriot is okay with this, you need to go read the Constitution. Anybody who is a patriot needs to know about the division of the branches of government and the basic tenets of due process, the basic tenets of the amendments, you know, certain things.
Yes.
For a patriot group to sponsor something that says we're going to prevent two of the three branches of federal government from having anything to do with the people, with the Idaho people, not the people of Idaho or the state of Idaho, but just blankly Idaho people. Idaho persons, that is Idaho persons and Idaho citizens. So I don't know what Idaho is. I don't know what an Idaho person is. I certainly don't know what an Idaho citizen is. And I am kind of really concerned with the language of law of war and leaving just the judiciary all the way up into the federal government to do it to the people of Idaho.
Well,
I mean, it's fascism.
Yeah. Well, it's frightening in its concept, mostly because, again, here, go back to S-178, where they unconstitutionally delegated lawmaking authority to the Department of Justice regarding the elderly. This scared the bejesus out of me.
Well,
this bill
and they don't have the
trap.
Standing. They don't have the standing, and we can go back to
but
that
the thing
standing.
Is, Lotus, you know, they'll do it anyway. They'll do it anyway where they got standing
what,
and nobody.
And here's the key word. If you're in bankruptcy, the key word is if you're in repository trust law, which we are under the Fed Act, and you're under Suscate trust law, which we are, based upon how the Fed Act was funded and before,
uh-huh.
and how the public and how we went from a privately held treasury to a public treasury, which is the bankruptcy 1841, which was caused by massive multi-million dollar thefts from the general coffers of the federal instrument. I mean, literally, like $20 million. Like, that's on the record. I think I have that on my Facebook page, a screenshot of that, of like the actual document from the Annals of Congress that discussed this, like, $20 million misappropriation of money in 1840, you know, requiring a bankruptcy, you know, from the general coffers. And no one knows where it's at, but it was privately run at that time by, guess who, you know, our trustees, bar union
right.
members. So, you know,
yeah.
that's how it goes. But,
yeah.
we, you know, these are the cultivations of the proof. So we've had to endure
yeah.
this warring upon us with paper wars, is what I call them.
Yeah.
And paper chess, that's one of my favorite things, is this paper chess, you know. We're, and till we can prove our law that says you people are corrupt. You just use systems of state to abuse and to oppress tyranny and equity. Not, you know, people forget that equity is the biggest issue in our government, equity. But
right.
it comes from the concept of inequity that was preached in the Orthodox Christianity, that we don't believe in inequity. So that's the biggest issue, you know. And
right.
so we've had to prove that the people that we've delegated as not the law of our realm and not of us, that, you know, like St. John said, they are not of us, but they come through us, you know.
You're right.
So, you know,
okay.
So these are that evolution of law. And as soon as we cure this in bankruptcy, and the issues with that are fiduciary duty. That's the biggest word right now is fiduciary duty,
mm-hmm.
because everything
right.
they're doing is based on our full faith and credit. Well, in our full faith, in our faith, iniquity is not allowed. And it certainly
right.
is not allowed in obfuscation of the law. They're not following the law, the statute, their admin. They're not following nothing. And here's how
right.
they're not following. They're not required to. If you read the Judicial Act of, if you read the Bankruptcy Act of 1898, Section 30, says that the Supreme Court has the authority to modify this act by rules and administrative processes or something. So basically it gave the Supreme Court the ability to dictate making law from the bench. So, and there's these key little things that have happened in law. I mean, for example, if you read the statutes at large that were put out by the Congress during the Civil War, you know how they obfuscated the electoral process. You also see how they created the Supreme Court of D.C., which was a mayor's court of three, then it went to five. I mean, they morphed it. And in one
mm-hmm.
pleat and in one thing, they changed the name without telling you they changed the name from the court, the Superior Court of D.C. or something to the United States Supreme Court. You know, like you see it in statute, and it's the morphing where they put
mm-hmm.
instruments of commerce within the seats of government. And that's
right.
the beauty of it, because, see, since corporations, as trustees, even our states are corporations, and every
right.
instrument of commerce, every corporation is a franchise of a public nature that has been leased the license to operate in commerce through the state. So they have to, in order to be true and de jure and not subject to being seized, they have to operate within the statutes at large. That's the agreement of their licensure. So everything is suitable under criminality into law by their own 13th Amendment. See, it's the paradox and the beauty of the system we've made. We just have to understand how to hold them accountable when they fail grossly and willfully with the intent to defraud in their fiduciary duties, which is where the criminality lies in our government right now, because people
okay.
are willfully failing in that, and they're oppressing
okay.
war through criminality.
Okay.
So. The,
okay.
the E-Clause, I don't know a lot about Chris's E-Clause, but I don't know what settlements there are. I know that I'm personally working on holding them accountable because, you know, Sus K trust law requires them to surrender bonds, to surrender our own estates back to us, things like this for gross negligence. So we'll either
okay.
find out in about a year or two whether we actually have law or it's all just a bunch of hooey. I mean, that's,
okay.
that's what we're going to find out. Within, I think, Trump's first term.
Luann, Robin, listening to all this, and like I say, she talks fast, and it's so much information, you're like opening up a library. I swear you are, Lotus. What's your take on all of this? Mighty Mouse, passed out. Go ahead.
Are you talking to me, Marty, or are you talking to Mighty Mouse?
Go ahead, Brian.
Okay, here's what I want to say real quick. Now you understand why I hang out with the Lotus Justice, the Chris Hallett, the John Gentry's, the Zena Crenshaw's, you know, all these brilliant people that can properly articulate everything out there because they've studied this stuff. They really hammer it in and hammer it home. But I still say that we need to be able to come together and we've got to somehow force the people in power in the position to let them know that they still work for us. They still work for us. And, you know, I'm just absolutely blown away with everything that Lotus has discovered, what Chris has discovered,
yep.
Everybody else, Robin, Lulu, what they've discovered. But we all have discovered the same thing. It's a cesspool of shit. They feed you this crap sandwich and want you to digest it and then tell them how much you appreciate the opportunity to be fed the shit sandwich. No, thank you. It's time that the American people stand up and fight back and say, listen, we want to have an independent oversight committee to look at the infractions being delivered at the hands of the judiciary. It's high time that you boys pay the price.
Well, and I agree, Brian. I agree. The idea, Lotus, with the information you just unloaded on us, and I'm going to have to go back and listen to this in slow-mo.
I'm trying to get back to a cycle, you know? It's all divine and cyclical,
Well, but the thing is, this is I preach this on a lot of other shows, too, and a lot of times on the Whistleblower Show, one of the things I keep telling the people, especially that are fighting the USDA, if you don't understand, if you have not researched and looked at how that organization is constructed, how it operates, the fact that it is a private corporation, it is not a government agency, it is contracted to the federal complex as a government action agency, you know, as a services agency. And if you don't understand the construction and you don't understand the terminology and how that agency exists, you can never defeat them. You can never defeat them because you will always go at them from the wrong angle. And this is
well, if you don't know the trust administrators, if you think they're the law, if you think they're the law instead of your trust administrators, and here's the interesting about like the stuff to what's happening in Idaho. I find that a repugnant passage, but I also understand that I can use that. I mean, that's, you know, when I tell people to cure, we talk about claims inequity. You know, there's certain things that you have to do to cure our crown of common law. You can't take a legal representative. That's defined in the statutes. And I really want everyone to write this down, because if you have PACER, please go read this. This is the principal brief on the fourth crown of common law, where I expose how they use the soul plates of the birth certificate or the certificates of live birth, how they use the Invictio in Title 28, 1332, which is the minute you become you take legal representation, the legal representative and the person the ward and infants are always given legal representation upon birth. So you guys have been hypothecated at birth, but it's to get around that surety so they can lay their debts upon you again. See, because what the state really does is it's just a big Ponzi scheme, and we knew that, but we're getting ready to cure the Ponzi scheme. See, if you read the book about Ponzi, the guy who was the first guy who brought the Ponzi scheme that they're named after, his argument in law was, I didn't commit a crime because you didn't give me time to cure it. He averred up until the time he was committed or whatever, you know, put in prison, that they shortchanged him because what he was saying would happen if they'd given him enough time to prove his risk, his fiduciary duty. So we're in a Ponzi scheme that we're getting ready to cure because we've proved that they should have never been given our trusteeship. We've been in trust law since then. We've been officially down to the states and into the general man itself, where now they're stealing our babies to pay off our debts. I mean, that's what they're doing. They're selling babies off. They're selling babies to the highest bidder. But the thing about it is, though, they know that that baby has a bomb that's worth millions. We're being lied to.
Let me tell you something. When I applied for my, and I know this is going to come as a shock to many of you, but I'm not a young woman. when I went to apply for my Social Security, my birth certificate has never been registered with the IMF. I have the old black and white reverse negative fish with the seal of the state of Iowa on it.
Right.
When I went to apply, they said, oh, you have to register this. I said, no, I don't. Well, you have to. You can't get your Social Security. Yes, I can. No, you have to register. No, I don't. Show me the law. Well, it is the law. Where is it? Show me the law that says I have to do this. And, well, we can't accept this. Yes, you can. I refuse to this day. I have never registered my birth certificate with the IMS.
I think I refuse. Facebook page. It's a form of claiming of an estate. I mean, if you if you on the back of yours, if you actually had an actual certificate of live birth with a with in some instances, they'll tell you on the back there's like eight purposes and it says claiming of one's estate. And and so I want everyone to go. This is a case in the Seventh Circuit Court. We have two cases, one in the sixth and one in the seventh. Actually, we have four in the sixth, but so we have one in the seventh, and it's a cure for jurisdiction for the kidnapping and unlawful imprisonment of Rhea's mother for the purpose of kidnapping. I mean, they coerced her into plea agreement. I mean, they got her to plead guilty with promising to give her kid back. They used him as a ransom. And then they trafficked the kid. Horrible. I mean, it's horrible. They interfered with an adoption. I mean, it's egregiously on the face corruption, and then we just proved treason and sedition all the way up through the courts, and we're now on the Seventh Circuit. But the case number is 172879. And when you go to the seventh, they have this weird kind of thing. You have to go to the bottom of the page and hit the CMS again. If you go into Pacer and you put 17-2879 in the first character, even though it says year only. But and the entry you want to look at, because they've obfuscated the pleading, they always do, but at least they put it on. It's entry 23, and that's the principal brief, and it's a writ of scrier facia. And you want to go read, if you can't read the whole thing, you want to go read lines page 536, line 11. To 13 of 36, line 21, and that'll give you the entire history in the law of how they're obfuscating our crown of law to try to subject us to the magisterial, the civil magistrate again, so they can eat our wealth. So we've proven that these people, because they're driven by greed and power and disgusting reprobate mindsets and behavior, these people have actually, because we removed them from the law, have brought their disgusting behavior through the corporate statutes in bankruptcy to the point where they valued our children, have bonded our children, and then somebody sold our children in the Fed market and yada, yada, yada. So now the capita, the child, is incarnated with their Jubilee trust rights. You understand?
Right.
So we've done our job. We just have to, in the statutes, we just have to get rid of the corruption, which is what everyone's working on, which is what all people care about.
Okay.
You know,
I hate that.
So we'll be good.
Okay, Chris Hallett is sitting on here, and I'm hoping I've got him live.
Great.
He's been live the whole time. Chris, can you hear us? Can you talk to us at all? See, he's not speaking to us. I don't know why. Chris? He's just silent.
Maybe it's on mute.
Okay. All right. But apparently, Mighty Mouse probably scared him off. I don't know why. But
he does that.
Brian, what's your take on all of this, you especially having dealt with your children? And I still maintain we need these citizen oversight committees that operate like say.
Absolutely.
And that's the First Amendment right. That's the First Amendment right. Don't it? It's the First Amendment right. It's freedom of association. Yeah, there's a variety of rights you have to do that. As long as people don't go going around saying that there's some de jure common law grand jury and issuing presentments and stuff when they have no standing, all these other things that these people are being led to do. From my affirm, I'm going to tell you, there are a lot of people out there that are professing to be gurus in the common law, and they are definitely directing people to do very bad things, some of them criminal, and they clearly are repugnant to the law and what they're doing. So, you know, again, like you said, if you don't know the law, or if you're not willing to pay the price for being ignorant of the law, is more importantly, because we always pay the price for being ignorant of the law. They never do.
Yes.
That's what,
no, they don't.
That's what the squires did for the kings and the knights. They made sure that their masters never paid. They made sure their masters never paid. So we always pay for our ignorance of the law, and they make sure that their masters never do.
Right.
That's their job. By polluting titles, that's the big deal.
Yeah.
They, you know,
Brian,
so, I mean, we're...
Oh, I'm sorry.
Well, I'm here, Marty. I'm here. And that's just what I'm saying, too, is that, you know, but once we have these oversight panels, we still need to be able to come up with a sellable solution as how do we get it so that once the there's a majority rule on those panels, whereas let's say we set it up like the 13 different jurisdictions for the federal court, and let's say that 9 out of the 13 unanimously agree that there is direct violations of law here that warrant prosecution, we need to be able to have a direct access to those parties or a remedy, a method of how to initiate those proceedings without having to go through and ask somebody for permission. And that's one of the things that Lotus has done. Yeah, you know, and that's what I'm saying.
There's actually some statutory options for those too. I mean, if you establish that you have standing, if people can learn to aver their standing, even as organizations, and say how they have standing, and there are requirements for standing, but you know, where you can be an interpleader and or join the motion as well, even as organizations. So, you know, the goal of these organizations has to be clearly upon the face that they're operating for the preservation of the republic and the body of laws, and not trying to, you know, I have no intention, nor do I desire any form of violent overthrow or any type of formal rebellion, unless absolutely necessary, because I advocate for children and the elderly and the disenfranchised, and those are the people that would be the first to perish in that circumstance. So I'm trying to cure the law where we can have disagreements and leave a tyranny out of it. That's really the goal. Because if this is a law of commerce, why am I paying with torts? Because that's a trespass. You know, if these are arguments of commerce, why am I paying with my flesh? You know.
There you go.
And
we have a caller. We have a caller waiting here from area code 786. Did you have a question or comment for any of us?
Hi, this is Marcy.
Hi, Marcy.
I'm from Florida. How are you?
Good. How you doing?
Good.
Hi, Marcy.
I just got home, so I'm just joining in, but I did want to ask about the right of association, because and regarding to the First Amendment, because my mother, this is the fifth court order for me to be able to see her. And then the last time I went to court, I'm getting a rehearing for the abatement, but and I have a court day on the 14th. So I think if I bring that up, maybe I can make some sense to these people.
Well, any type of family member pursuant to case law and positive law is being deprived of another family member. I mean, freedom to associate is also covered under familial associations. That's the first, you know, that's kind of the first family, or the first right of the family is to associate, because that keeps the family unit integral. And so you have a right to not be withheld from your mother. I mean, under what foundation, you know, that's a right. You're supposed to have a right to freely associate with your family. And that's one of the constitutional violations that all of these seizures of children and the seizures of the elderly are violating. Who are they? And this is where you know, what jurisdiction of law do you have to remove my mother from my association? So I can't even talk to my mother. Is she a criminal? Do I get to see her once a week in the waiting room? Because you get to see your mom at least once a week if she was in jail. You'd do better to get your mom arrested, because you can see her more. See, that's the issue here. So they're kidnapped. You know, I surely hope that you've reported her kidnapping to the FBI, because you should. And if they won't take it, then you send it in writing, let them send it back. And you should report her kidnapping to the DOJ, because, you know, if they don't, the only reason you would keep a family member from each other is if they are physically harming each other. That's the only foundations for Title IV removals. It's founded on violence within the family that is potentially undermining the safety and security of the child. Those are the four reasons established in Title IV for seizing children.
Uh-huh.
So you have a right to speak to your mother. And what it also is an obstruction of justice, because you're trying to check on your mom, and you're your mom's best friend, and you're her best advocate. So why would they be keeping you from her? So that you can't know what they're doing to her? So that you can't know how they're treating her and bring a cause of action for their gross violations of her, you know, all of her constitutional amendments, pretty much. So you have to understand the motive by why they would be preventing you from seeing her, you know, if you aren't harming her in these things. So it's basically your mom's in a concentration camp. I mean, think of it that way. And so it's fascism. See, it's really, it's the same methodologies used in Nazi Germany. They just didn't have the right republic constitution. Germany's a republic, but they didn't have the checks and balances in the law, nor had they created a pillar of law that would prevent the fascists, who are corporatists. Fascists are fascios, fascists from the fasces, okay? A fascism is derived from the fascia, things bundled together, such as unions. So when unions run your government, you're in fascism, okay? Especially if they're exacting war upon the people. They did it in Germany, but they didn't have a way to stop it. Well, they say everything that happened in Germany was made legal. It wasn't lawful pursuant to the Constitution. It was made legal. So we're at the same precipice. And I really assure people, and I can say this wholeheartedly, that if Hillary Clinton had won the presidential race, we would be in balls-out fascism right now. We would just be in overt baby trafficking, ripping people off the street in uniforms, brown shirts, because you have brown shirts. Cops are acting like brown shirts. Cops and CPS workers are going and seizing people. They're seizing families. They're seizing children. And they're disappearing them. They're disappearing our people through the war system. Wow. So instead of it being through militarism, because we have that check, the true root of the corruption that even allowed the fascism in Germany to be brought up and the overthrows of a lot of the governments in the Leninist constructs and all that stuff, all that stuff is through the corruptions of the banking and the courts and what's supposed to be the law of the realm. The law of the realm's corrupt because it's founded upon the eating the substance of the people. It's Babylonian slave trade. It's everyone's a slave but the people trading. And everyone can be enslaved if we have more power. You know, we can traffic the Christians. You know, we can traffic these people. We can do that because, you know, they're easy marks. We can traffic the weak and the disfranchised, you know, and old.
But what we're seeing happening across the country is the disappearance of entire homeless communities. The idea that in the United States of America we even have homeless, to me, is just absolutely
abhorrent. You're in the throes of fascism. You are in the throes of fascism.
Yes, they are disappearing these people with no explanation of where they have gone, what happened to them, and
guess
where
who's disappearing
go?
Them mostly. Exactly, and that's the thing. But here's the beauty of that: everyone's social security number is trackable, even if they change your name. And if you reissued a new birth certificate and or another Social Security, it's trackable. Every Social Security number can be – we have the capacity pursuant to the way we've designed the system that we can track everything they do. Everything's on a mass database sitting there waiting to be minefield. We don't need them alive anymore. People could be dead, and all we have to do is pull the big data byte sitting in the NSA. The instruments that they brought to track us so they could steal the people they wanted who were worth more money and keep track of the people who were exposing their crimes of state and the humanity and the human trafficking and the corruption and racketeering, the RICO. It's gaming, it's RICO, it's criminal enterprises at the most disgusting level with human trafficking, baby trafficking, pedophile rings. It's just repugnant what is happening in this country. But we're going to deal with it in the law, because last time, you know, what they put four poor privates up in the Nuremberg trials and hang four people for crimes that were committed by way more than four guys and way higher up in the food chain. We're not, no, that's not happening. And if you I have actually the law book about the Nuremberg trials, and the funny thing is they say all of the defendants are on the dock. Not the docket, the dock. An Admiralty court. They tried them at Admiralty. And we're not going to try them at Admiralty anymore. We're going to bring them to equity, and then we're going to send them straight to law, and then we're going to try them for treason and sedition. That's what we're going to do.
That is,
so I can't bring them to the law.
Yeah, but this is something we need to talk about on another show, and I do want to have you on another show. And we're down to about the last 5 minutes here. I wish we had 4 or 5 hours so we could just let you keep rolling. Luann, Robin, what are your thoughts here on all this?
Personally, my thoughts are, I Brian makes perfect sense. Lotus, perfect sense. Mighty Mouse sitting next to me, Robin Austin, makes perfect sense. And Marty, you're right on every time you talk. And I'm exactly with Brian Kinter. If we don't come together and if we don't work together to stop this, it's going to continue.
Exactly.
You know, our courts have absolutely no transparency or accountability. People are being robbed of their family, their civil liberties, you name it. It is. We're in a fascist state. I really believe
that. They're disappearing people off the street, and then they're not. And the judiciary's hiding them from people who are their family members. They're stealing babies and striking their own subpoenas and declaring that you can't even file a habeas corpus in the state of Ohio unless you have a license to practice law. Oh, and you can't even challenge the fact that there is a license to practice law unless you have one here either. That was ruled by the Supreme Court. They have a locked, rogue, corrupt, pedophile ring-running baby trafficking machine in the state. It's disgusting.
Yep.
And it's been going on for 25, 30 years from what I've been told.
Well, and the thing is, this was the other thing, and speaking to this person from Mount West this week, I expressed the notion that there is a massive movement afoot, and there is, to disbar the bar, to get rid of it, that it presents a clear and present danger to the country as an organization. They should be disbanded, forbidden to assemble. They should not be allowed in government. They represent a threat to us. This is the other thing I'm seeing growing.
That is back to what the Tona said they were, and that's the point of it. Because they're connected to our trust, we can bankrupt their masters. We can bankrupt every one of them. And that's what needs to happen to finally end this elitism, this theft of our material capital and wealth. The history of humanity proper, which is far older than they say it is, has been stolen, bombed off the face of this earth, and being withheld from us by people who know exactly what it is, and they obfuscate the truth of who we are and where our laws from and what we've come to know and where we've been and our history of our civilization specifically for control so they can eat the substance of us in every way you can imagine, including our children. This is a very inherent evil that we are writing out here.
Again, go back to this book. I just can't, I don't recommend a lot of books, but this is one of those ones that in my lifetime I will never let this thing go. It's called White Trash, The 400-Year Untold History of Class in America. If you think we were founded as a Christian nation on Christian principles, you are sadly mistaken. That was the myth that was sold to you. It was the myth. This was human waste.
And yet I can prove it. I can prove it.
Exactly.
In the law that it was. And that's the divine providence. And that's okay. It was an argument in law. And good, and what they felt was, if we give them a new foundation, we believe that a good, righteous, and moral society will evolve just naturally by divinity. Because not everyone's bad. Not everyone's bad, guys. It's just a small group, and it's like that bad apple thing, you know?
But this thing, we've come full circle. Here we are.
Absolutely.
400 years later, and they are viewing us as human waste. We are white trash. Yep. The book is called White Trash because the original slave trade in this country, the way it was settled, the way it was, the wealth was built, was on the backs of white people taken off the streets of England, who were poor, who were indigent, who could not work. It was those people brought here as slaves and indentured servants. And later came the black slaves. And when they cleaned out their prisons, everything brought them here. The black Irish. They cleaned out their prisons. Australia was settled the same way. Australia is well known to be a penal colony. That's how they got rid of all of their indigent, their poor, their convicts. They took them and dumped them out in Australia. We were settled exactly the same way. And this was Thomas Jefferson's statement in his letter to his friend Dr. Cooper. We've got a republic of sorts if you can keep it. And the only way we can keep it is if you can keep religion out of it. And they understood
It's the law in Christianity. It's not the religion. It's the law, the tenets of 24 and 12, and the tenets of not being a slave and cherishing the children. There's law and the witness of two. The law of the common law tenets, the things that rule when is a witness, when we have how many people compel a jury, those are all in the Bible as in numbers and descriptions and maxims.
Yes.
It's not so much the religion he was bringing forth, because if you think about it, Yeshua, if the figure did exist and he did stand before Rome, he was the first person in history accorded that declared himself civilly dead and not subject to the law of the realm. He created the crown. I didn't. He did.
There you go.
He created, that's a trust. There is a trust established by that.
Okay,
so
we've got 45 seconds.
It's actually law.
Yeah, we got 45 seconds. Lotus,
well,
I got to have
you
back.
Much.
I got to have you back. Brian, thank
well,
you
thank
for
you
sitting
so much.
There patiently. And Luann,
well, Brian, make sure I get her contact info, please. Please.
Yes. And Mighty Mouse, thank you. I know this was tough. Mm-hmm. I know Luann stuffed you in the closet to keep you quiet. But anyway, and Chris, I don't know why we couldn't hear you, but I was glad to see you were here anyway. We'll be back, and we will have Lotus back on again. I want to thank everybody for tuning in. Got a lot of feedback on this, and we'll be back next week, everyone. And have a good evening. Good night.
Good evening, everyone.
Good night. Thank you.
Good night. Thanks, guys. Namaste.
Namaste.
Namaste.